Episode number 16 of Alight is brought to you by FreshBooks and the 30-day free trial of this whoop-ass service you can get at gofreshbooks.com/Sigler. Do you got a small business? If you're like me, QuickBooks and other expensive-ass accounting packages are too much and too complicated. FreshBooks is the easy-to-use invoicing software designed exclusively for small business owners who bill their time and expertise. It's designed to help freelancers and small business owners get organized, save time invoicing, save on PayPal fees, and get paid faster. Boom. Get a 30-day free trial of gofreshbooks.com/Sigler. If you use it, you'll pay by the month and avoid those whopping upgrade prices from QuickBooks. I know. FreshBooks will pay for itself in a matter of months. Get that free trial at gofreshbooks.com/Sigler. And now on with our story. Welcome to the serial audiobook A Light, an unabridged podcast of Book 2 in the Generations Trilogy. Written by Scott Sigler. Performed by Emma Galvin. This novel is available in print, ebook, or as a full-length audiobook. For links to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Audible, please visit scottsigler.com/alight. Hello, junkies! Welcome to episode number 16 of A Light, and welcome to our new sponsor, FreshBooks. Pretty cool offer. If you do have a small business, if you bill for your time, you do anything like that, you're an expert, whatever, go check it out, and we'll talk more about that in upcoming episodes. Again, that is gofreshbooks.com/Sigler. Easy to use. Check it out. We just had an empty set summit meeting where a real girl and I plotted out the next year of our little empire, and it was quite fun. We've settled on publication dates for a couple of products that you guys have been waiting for, a couple of books. We're going to have those announcements soon, just as soon as we lock down the calendar, make sure everything is doable. Because somebody tends to overpromise things. I don't know who that is, but we want to make sure we don't overpromise anything and start getting on a good foot of delivering on the dates we say we're going to deliver on. Did you hear our latest Friday Fix episode? A Real Girl and I sat down and covered the 66 best movie taglines of all time. It was a very fun episode. If you're a movie buff, you're going to love it. You can get that in the podcast feed, get it at iTunes, or just go to scottsigler.com and look just below A Light episode 16. Also, you'll see this stuff if you're following me at Facebook, facebook.com/scottsigler, or Twitter or Instagram, which are both at Scott Sigler. There is no talkie talk after the episode, so let me get you caught up on the story, and then we're going to break stuff! Previously on A Light, M has just learned that Spingate is pregnant with Gaston's child. How will this affect the group? The Zolol had only one shuttle, which the birthday children took to reach the surface, but in the last episode, an unknown ship descended to the planet and landed somewhere within the walls of Ukmal. Who or what is on that ship? Find out next on A Light, episode number 16. 30.
Gaston was so mad, I thought he might attack Aramovsky. I had Farrar watch them while I sent Beckett to use the pilot house map, see if he could figure out where the new ship landed. It landed near the observatory. We ride Coyote's spider. Five of us are aboard. Me, Coyote, Bishop, Bodden, and a young brown-haired circle star named Mueller. He's as tall as I am. I wonder how big he'll get in the next few years. My fingers still hurt, although not as much. Smith put some bits of metal on them, which helped, and poked them with a needle, which helped even more. I glared at her the entire time. She refused to meet my eyes. The clouds that block the stars are starting to break up. Twin moons cast enough light to see some detail of the vine-covered streets, the dark buildings that rise up all around us. On foot, this trip took us half the day. Atop the sprinting spider, it doesn't even take half an hour. As we drive, Bishop plans our strategy. "Em, you and Mueller will stay on the spider," he says. "Mueller is a good shot. We'll stop a few blocks from where the ship went down. Baudin and I will continue on foot. I'll go left, she'll go right. We'll observe the ship from the flanks. Coyotl, once we get out, you wait 1 minute, then approach the ship straight on, but move slow, so the spider's feet don't make too much noise. Stay a block or so away. Close enough so you can rush in if you hear gunfire. All around me, heads nod. What if it's grown-ups? Baudin says. Can we shoot them? Bishop shakes his head. Don't fire unless fired upon. Stay low, stay out of sight. We only have 3 muskets. If there are 4 or more grown-ups, and they're all armed, we're dead even if all 3 of us kill on our first shot. The spider slows, stops. Coyotl steers the machine into the deep shadows of a smaller road. The ship is 2 blocks due east, he says. Bishop and Baudin hop over the side, hit the ground and vanish into the shadows. Coyotl moves the spider forward, but much slower. I can barely hear the pointed feet touching down. We travel 1 creeping, slow block. Then, I see it. The ship looks lumpy. Moonlight plays down on smoke rising up from a long path behind it. Vines smolder, some even flickering with tiny flames. I don't know what to make of that ship. Our shuttle is streamlined, something born to slice through the air. This ship? It is 1/4 the size and has no sleekness. Weird shapes stick out. I see rivets and bumps. Some parts look melted. Smoke or maybe steam rises up. A few spots are actually glowing, like metal heated in a fire. The machine clinks and clonks, as if someone is tapping on it with tiny hammers. Moonlight intensifies. The cloud cover is breaking. I see something moving near the ship. It's not a grown-up, not a springer. It is a person, like us. The wind picks up. I hear vine leaves start to rattle. That person. It can't be. I grab Coyote's shoulder. Move in, I say. Right now. What? But Bishop said, now, go! The spider lurches forward so fast, Mueller and I grab at the protective ridge to stop from falling backward. The silent machine streaks in with nothing more than a rapid click, click, click of pointed feet. The person hears us coming, turns. As the spider slows and stops, the last of the clouds blow clear. Moonlight streams down on a long-sleeved white shirt, a red and black plaid skirt, pale skin, and wispy blonde hair. The girl looks up at me. Hello, Em, Bello says. I escaped. 31. It can't be. She's gone. Bello is gone. Bishop rushes in from the left. Slinging his musket, he engulfs Bello in a hug. She laughs and winces, hugs him back, her feet dangling. Bishop, she says. Oh my God, it's good to see you. Baudin sprints in from the right, but she doesn't run to Bello. Musket butt tight against her shoulder, she scans the intersection, looking everywhere, ready to bring the barrel up on the moment's notice. Seeing nothing, she steps into the ship's open hatch. Bishop has forgotten the danger. Baudin has not. Bishop is still hugging Bello, still laughing. But is that Bello? Or is it Bello's creator, wearing my friend's body like a new suit? Bishop sets her down. I haven't seen him smile like that since we landed. You're safe, he says. Was anyone with you? She shakes her head. Only me. Baudin steps out of the ship. It's empty. Coyotl hops over the spider's protective ridge, lands without a sound. He hugs Bello. Baudin takes her eyes off the surrounding buildings long enough to squeeze Bello's arm and smile. Then the circle star with the shaved head is once again looking for threats. Everyone is happy to see Bello. Except me. Am I the only one who understands the danger? You escaped, I say. How did you escape? She smiles up at me until she realizes I'm not smiling back. Her smile fades. The others glance at me with odd expressions, like I should be down on the street with them celebrating. My mind is shouting at me to believe. It's her. It's her. You left her and that was awful, but she got away and now it's okay. If I go down there, if I touch her, smell her, I know I will lose the ability to think about this logically. I'll stay on the spider until this is finished. It's me, she says softly. It's me. It is Bello. I can see her. She's right in front of me. It isn't Bello. Can't be. She's been overwritten. I reach out my good hand, take the musket from Mueller. He's so surprised he doesn't even struggle to keep hold. Get out, I say to him. There must be something in my voice, because the 12-year-old kicks a leg over the protective ridge, scrambles down the rails, and drops down to the vine-covered street. I put the musket butt to my shoulder. My splinted fingers make it hard to hold the weapon, so I rest the barrel on the spider's protective ridge. I've never fired one of these, but I've seen it done, and it's not like it takes a Spingate or a Gaston to figure out how to pull a trigger. I aim at Bello's chest. Bishop looks at me confused. Em, what are you doing? Everyone stands there like they don't know what to do. I certainly don't. I have no idea if this is my friend or an evil thing that is 1,000 years old. I have to find out. Answer my question, I say to Bello. How did you escape? I see tears in her wide hazel eyes, quick to cry, just like the Bello I knew. Bishop shakes his head slightly. He can't process this. He and I were gutted that we had to leave her behind. The guilt has been with us every moment since, shaping us like strong hands forming wet clay. Now he is free of that guilt, and the relief blinds him. Bodden continues to scan the surrounding buildings, as if none of this matters to her. Coyote shifts from foot to foot, looking at Bello, looking at me. Mueller has no idea what to do. He looks from me to Bello to Bishop and back again. I remember the black hand grabbing Bello's mouth, the black arm wrapping around her waist, yanking her backward into the greenery. I remember that look of terror in her eyes. I remember not being able to save her. I remember abandoning her. How did you escape? Brewer helped me, she says. The tears are coming fast now, wet trails glistening in the light of 2 moons. The grown-ups who grabbed me put me in a cell. There was a fight between the grown-ups. About what? I say. What were they fighting about? She slowly shakes her head. I don't know. I heard some explosions, some screams. Then this grown-up opened my cell. Said his name was Brewer. He took me to the ship. It can't be that simple. It can't. They had you for days, I say. Your brain would have been overwritten. Her hands go to her shoulders. She's hugging herself, just like she did back on the Zolotl when she got upset. They tried, she says. They put me in a coffin, put this thing on my head, but their machine didn't work. She closes her eyes, rubs hard at her temples. I thought I was going to die. It hurt so bad, and it messed up my brain a little. I still recognize faces, but a lot of the stuff that happened since we came out of the coffins is gone. It's okay, though, because when the pain stopped, I was still myself. Did you hear what I said, Em? Their overriding machine failed. That doesn't explain how you escaped, I say. You don't know how to fly, Bello. You're just a circle. I didn't fly the ship. Brewer told me to get in, that he'd handle the rest. Brewer controlled so many things on the Zolotl. Is it possible he could have sent the ship down, guided it to this crash landing? Brewer told me there was only one shuttle left, I say. How do you explain that? Look at it. She gestures to the lumpy ship. It's not a shuttle. It was used to repair the outside of the Zolotl. Something like that, I think. I don't remember his exact words. I was so scared. Wouldn't Brewer have told me there was a second ship capable of reaching Omeokan? And if he held back that bit of information, then Bello's story is believable. At the same time, if she really is a grown-up, I imagine she can lie without the slightest effort. I need Spingate and Gaston to take a look at her. And Smith. Maybe there's a physical way to tell the difference between our Bello and whatever happens when we're overwritten. Or maybe I can remember something Bello and I talked about. Something the grown-up Bello wouldn't know. We weren't together long. We didn't really talk about that much. Except for one thing. On the Zolotl, before we met Bishop's group, I say. We all talked about our favorite desserts. What was Aramovsky's? Please say cupcakes. Please say cupcakes. Bella licks her lips. She's not looking at me. She's staring down the barrel of the gun. I told you. My memories are scrambled. Please. It's me. She doesn't know. Did the overwrite process damage her memories? Or is that the perfect lie? If she can't remember anything, there's nothing we can do to prove she is not who she says she is. Bello clasps her hands together in front of her chest. Please, she says. Please don't kill me. Bishop steps in front of her. That's enough, he says. Put down the weapon. I stand there for a second, confused, until I realize my shaking hands could accidentally pull the trigger and shoot Bishop. I lower the musket. Damn it, Bishop. Maybe I had the will to pull the trigger, but now I'll never know. That moment has passed. I can't bring myself to do it again. Let's get back to the shuttle, I say. Bello, you come up here with Coyotl and me. The rest of you, run back on foot. Coyotl guides her to the spider, helps her up. She finds a place to stand that is as far away from me as she can get. Bodden finally slings her musket. Should someone stay with this ship? She asks. Mueller and I can watch it. Leave someone behind? Looking at Bello, that's the last thing I want to do now. Besides, we know Springers can get into the city. At least Barca can. Spingate and I were making progress with him, but we didn't exactly part on good terms. He is an alien. As much as I like to think we could be friends, I realize I have no idea what he is really thinking, or what his kind is capable of doing. We're not splitting up, I say. Everyone, move out. 32. Bello stares up at me, crying silently. Close it, I say. The medical coffin's lids rise up and shut tight. I turn to face Smith, who is looking at some images floating above her white pedestal. I'll try, she says. But even if the overwriting process changed her brain somehow, I'm not sure there's any physical way to tell. I've never examined Bello before, so there's nothing to compare her current state against. But I'll try, I really will. Smith seems eager to help. She wants to get back into my good graces, perhaps. She knows I'm furious at her for betraying Spingate's confidence. Do your best, I say, wondering if she actually will without Aramovsky telling her to do so. Outside the medical room, Bishop is waiting for me. He's anxious. The emotion doesn't suit him well. It's Bello, he says quietly. Don't you think we'd be able to tell if it wasn't our friend? I say nothing. We head for the pilot house. He wants to believe so badly when he should doubt her every word. I'm disappointed in him. When I thought I would do anything to keep him from thinking poorly of me, it never crossed my mind that the situation might someday be reversed. In the pilot house, Gaston, Spingate, and O'Malley are waiting for us. The walls show images of people talking in the coffin room, the dark landing pad outside with three spiders standing watch, and Bello's closed coffin in the medical room. Smith doesn't know if she can detect overwriting, I say. Spin, anything in your lab that would help us? She won't make eye contact. Right away, I'm sure she's holding something back. I'm so hungry, my fingers hurt, my shoulders ache, and my head is pounding. I don't have patience for more secrets. Speak up, I snap. Not telling me the truth is the same as lying to me. She flinches. That hurt. I wanted it to hurt. I'm done with this girl hiding things from me. Bishop crosses his arms. Now you're starting in on Spingate? Who will you doubt next? Me? If you keep acting like a gullible kid, yes. Bello could be playing you for a fool. So stop thinking we don't have to pay a price for leaving her behind and start thinking about the safety of the shuttle and our people. Bishop's lip curls. He's not used to anyone speaking to him that way. Gaston puts his hand on Spingate's back, rubs a small circle. Just tell her, he says. She brushes back her thick red curls, struggles to force out the words. One of the things my progenitor studied was the overwriting process, she says. I can only recall a little bit. Just snippets, really. I'll try to remember if there's a way to test Bello. But, my progenitor. She wanted to learn how to erase people. She liked it. Gaston glares at me like it's my fault I dragged that out of her. Like all of a sudden Spingate is this fragile thing that needs protecting. Why? Because she's pregnant? Spingate can take care of herself. I know how you feel, I say to her. But we can't control the evil things our creators did. We can only control the choices we make. Do your best. She nods. I will. But I should be focusing on the red mold instead. Zubiri will do that, I say. You focus on Bello. O'Malley shakes his head. So this is more important than food? The grown-ups made receptacles so they could live on Omeokan. If this Bello is a grown-up, then she got what she wanted. Anything she does to harm us also harms her. If our Bello is gone, I'm sorry about that, but we shouldn't be wasting our time with this. Besides, she's too small to be a threat. What is he thinking? I'm small and I've killed twice. But does he have a point? Bello is alone. What can she do? Trick people to go back to her lumpy ship and return to the Zolotl? Only 6 of us would fit in there, 7 at most. No, there is a way for her to take all of us. Bello said she didn't fly the lumpy ship, I say. I look at Gaston. If she's lying, if she did fly it here, does that mean she'd have the skills needed to fly the shuttle back to the Zolotl? I see realization hit home on my friends' faces. Bishop's arms uncross. O'Malley glances at the wall showing Bello's coffin. Maybe now he understands that you don't have to be big to be dangerous. Maybe she could, Gaston says. Different ships usually have different controls, though. I'd have to see that lumpy ship to know if she could fly the shuttle. Then go look, I say. Right now. Coyote will take you on his spider, Bishop says. I'll send Mueller as well, with a musket. Bishop isn't volunteering to go, because he wants to stay in the shuttle. He finally understands the real threat might be here, with us, not somewhere out there. I won't go, Gaston says. Bello could be one of them. I'm not leaving Spingate here alone. There's hundreds of us here, Spingate says. I won't be alone. I'll watch out for her, I say. I'll make sure Bishop watches her too. Gaston, we need to know. He shakes his head, squares his shoulders. Send Beckett. He's studied hard. He knows how to fly. Spingate rolls her eyes. Gaston, I'll be fine. Go! He turns on her. I said no. That baby is ours. You don't get to make all the decisions just because you're the one carrying it. I'm not going. You're not going. And if you had told me you were pregnant before you went out looking for the Springers, I would have said the same goddamn thing then. Spingate's wide green eyes blink. She's shocked. So am I. So are all of us. We've never seen Gaston this angry. She knew about the baby before she and I set out to find the Springers, but she hadn't told him. Maybe she didn't because she knows him better than I do, because she knew he would have fought against her going. We'll send Beckett, I say. Gaston lets out a long breath. Thank you for understanding. It's not that I don't want to do what you ask. It's just that, well, I have to keep Spingate safe. That word yet again. Safe. How can anyone still believe it exists? 33. I spent the rest of the night, the morning and most of the afternoon in a med chamber, getting my broken fingers fixed. They still hurt, but nowhere near as bad. I can grip the spear properly again. Bello got out of her med chamber before I did, but I planned for that, telling Farrar to watch her closely. I'd hoped to come out of medical to answers, but that didn't happen. Spingate found nothing to prove that Bello is a grown-up. Neither did Smith. Science and medicine have failed me, so I'm trying the only thing I can think of, having my friends see if they can spot anything weird. Almost everyone is in the coffin room, listening to Bello tell of her escape. People want her story to be true. Of course they do. They want a future that is nice and neat. They want to believe that the grown-ups' overwriting machine is a failure, and that we don't have to worry about evil creatures in orbit preparing to erase us. The kids, especially, hang on Bello's every word. Not counting her, there are 18 teenagers left in our group, people who were with Bello on the Zolotl. Beckett and Coyotl are at Bello's ship, leaving 16 of us. At my subtle instruction, the teenagers don't just listen to Bello. They watch her, looking for any indication she is not who she says she is. And besides, a good story is a welcome distraction from our growing hunger. At least I know Bello won't try anything with all these people watching. Farrar will make sure she doesn't go farther into the ship, or go off by herself outside. When Beckett, Coyotl, and Mueller return, I'll have more information. If Bello's ship could be flown by autopilot, that's what Gaston calls it when a ship flies itself. Or if Brewer could have guided it down remotely, that means Bello might be telling the truth. I'll let her join us, but I'll make sure she's never alone. If it turns out her ship can't be flown without a pilot, then she's lying. She's a grown-up. I will lock her in one of the shuttle's storage rooms until we figure out what to do with her. We'll have to treat her like a prisoner. We'll have to question her. A nagging voice in my head tells me, just lock her up now, or have her killed immediately. It's the only way to be sure. It's not my father's voice this time. It's Matilda's, and to some degree, it's mine too. The only way to be sure. I force myself to look away from Bello. If Matilda were in my shoes, she'd kill Bello. But I am not Matilda. I will find another solution. Like the rest of us, I want Bello's story to be true. I want that desperately. Not just because I love her, the old her, anyway, but because if she's telling the truth, I can go look for Barca. My people are hungry. If that continues, I know Aramovsky will make a move. I think I have one day left before he does, maybe two. I remember Barca's anger at seeing Bello's ship. Did he react like that when our shuttle came down? Probably. His grandparents, or great-grandparents, or even farther back than that, must have seen the first ships from the Zolotl release the war machines. To the Springers, perhaps ships mean death. But Barca had never seen actual humans before. None of his kind had. They'd only seen machines. Not that encountering people had been that much better for the Springers. My kind leaves a trail of death wherever we go. Bello finishes her story by describing a daring run down a dark corridor, chased by horrifying grown-ups. She reaches her lumpy ship just in time, is shot out of the Zolotl to safety. It's like something out of a storybook. It would be unbelievable if the same thing hadn't happened to us when we took the shuttle. When she's done, people applaud. The kids scream with delight. They ask her to tell the story again. Blushing, Bello agrees. Once is enough for me. I walk outside. Night is falling. Bishop is at the base of the ramp, his axe in his hands. A spider stands on either side of him, guarding the shuttle. For a few moments, I just watch him. He's dressed in his black coveralls. I take in his broad shoulders, the way his neck muscles flutter when he turns his head. He hasn't been to Smith's white coffin to have his numerous scratches repaired. Under that black fabric are scars that bear witness to our struggles. I think of the way he looked in the garden, when he stood under the bright lights with nothing on but tattered pants. I think of how he looked when he threw my spear at the pig. I wanted to touch Bishop's skin then. At the pool, I did. I'd like to touch him again, kiss him again. I shut my eyes, give my head a hard shake. Now is most certainly not the time for such thoughts. I walk down the ramp and stand next to him. Good evening, Bishop. He's staring out toward the observatory. He should be back, he says. He should have been back an hour ago. His voice is heavy with dread. The emotion is contagious. I was so busy watching Bello, trying to find the truth, that I forgot a trip to the observatory is much faster on spider back than on foot. Coyotl, Mueller, and Beckett should have already returned. A cold feeling thrums in my belly and chest. I miss something, but what? My brain is trying to make a connection, Not the muddy sensation of recalling Matilda's memories. This is something else. I miss something new. Something that has nothing to do with my creator's life. Go after them, I say. Take a spider with Baudin and as many kids as you want. He starts up the ramp. And if they aren't at Bello's ship, how long should I spend searching for them? With Bishop and Baudin gone, Farrar will be the only older Circle Star we have left. Just Farrar and 12-year-olds to defend the shuttle. That's not enough. I think of when we ran out of the garden and abandoned Bello. It was a hard choice and I hated myself for it, but it was the right choice. If they aren't there, then come back without them, I say, as fast as you can. He runs into the shuttle. I stand where he stood, looking out toward the observatory. Please let them be all right. Moments later, Bishop runs down the ramp, Baudin and two young Circle Stars behind him. Only Baudin carries a musket. Mueller had one as well, which means Bishop is leaving three muskets here. In seconds, the four of them are mounted and on their way. I watch the spider scurry over the vine ring, then sprint down the darkening streets. Out ahead of them, no sign of Coyote and the others. There's something about Bello's ship I missed. But what? I can't put my finger on it. She's a grown-up. I know it. It's time to lock her up. Just because I won't act like Matilda doesn't mean I can't do something. Time to stop being so nice. Pounding steps on the ramp behind me. O'Malley in a panic. Em, get in here. Aramovsky is calling for a new vote. I turn my back for one moment and he does this? I'm almost glad, because he's moved too soon. Many follow him, but not enough. He should have waited until hunger swayed more people his way. I stride up the ramp and into the coffin room. Aramovsky is talking, turning, his arms outstretched, doing what he does so well. But he will lose this vote. Then, I will use that victory to block him from making another. He's finally made a mistake. And then, I see Bello. She's standing right next to him, whispering when he pauses. She notices me, stares at me, a cold hardness in her eyes. No tears this time. She smiles, sending a chill through me. Aramovsky steps into a closed coffin. He spreads his arms and his voice booms. Someone has to speak out loud what all of us are thinking, he says. Do we need new leadership? The majority of us, the people from Deck 4, never got a chance to vote at all. It's time to fix that. He locks eyes with me. It's not that M didn't do her best, he says. But perhaps the job of leader is too much for a circle. Too much for an empty. Too much. The corners of his mouth turn up in a grin of victory. For a slave. The word hangs in the air, pressing down, pushing at locked memories. I see hundreds of faces go blank. I see eyes widen and heads nod. For everyone, even the kids, the mention of that word opens up flash fires. They know. Gradually, all eyes turn to me. The things I've done right, they suddenly don't matter. My leadership, keeping the group together, getting us off the Zolotl, learning the mysteries of Omeokan, making contact with the Springers, none of it matters. In an instant, with a single word, they see me as something different than I was. They see me as less. I have to stop this right now. I'm not a slave, I say. None of us are. Just because the ring on my head says I'm service, or the double circle says Aramovsky is spirit, or the half circle means O'Malley is structure, doesn't mean we have to be those things. We make our own choices. I look to O'Malley for support, hoping he will back me up. But he just stares at me, open-mouthed, like I said something wrong. Something horribly wrong. Spirit, Aramovsky says. Structure. Service. I just now remembered what the symbols mean, but you already knew. Bello's little grin. She told him. She knows the symbols' meanings, because she's a grown-up. She told him what to say. Nearly 300 people are staring at me. 100 different lies jump to my brain, but none of them make it to my tongue. There is a brief moment where I can say something, deny that I didn't keep information from my people. And then that moment is gone. I am convicted by my own silence. The eyes glare at me now. Even Spingate's, her expression somewhere between betrayal and outrage. Not telling me the truth is the same as lying to me, I said to her. I'm guilty of the same thing, and everyone here knows it.
You have been listening to A Light, Book 2 in the Generations Trilogy. Written by Scott Sigler, performed by Emma Galvin. Produced by Adrian Galvin and engineered by Steve Rickyberg. Follow Scott on Twitter and Instagram, where his handle is at Scott Sigler, S-C-O-T-T-S-I-G-L-E-R, one word, or join our Facebook group at facebook.com/Scott Sigler. Theme music is the song Unseen Horrors by Kevin MacLeod.